Well, I do have a correction. I actually did not start the company. My dad did in 97, and I've been with him for 11 years since then. So left a consulting practice and decided to get in the restaurant business. Apparently, my degree wasn't worth a lot, and decided to get my hand at something that took a lot of labor and a lot of capital, and you don't make a lot of money. So it sounds a little bit like the cattle industry at times. So what I want to do today, I've got a couple of comments that I'm going to save for later on the presentations that were given earlier. So some great information there. And I was telling Barry 10 years ago that might have scared the hell out of a restaurateur like me in terms of where the pricing was at, where the pricing was going to be, where the export markets were going to be. And so I'm going to share some of those thoughts later when we talk about supply chain. I do have one further piece from Seattle. And if anybody watched Monday Night Football, Seahawks dominated. I cannot wait to see them in the Super Bowl. Okay, so why are we here today? What I look at is really what you do. And what I love is a show of hands of who likes beef in this room. Who likes, oh yeah, okay, good. I thought this was going to be a friendly crowd. So you make the cows for us, and we actually go through a whole other process. Because this is what we do. We take the cattle you produce, the feedlots, the harvesters, we buy in product, we dry age them, and we turn around and sell them. So I saw all the hands that love beef. Who likes New York steak? Like, because that's, for me, that's like the king. If you don't have a good New York tenderloins, you can have pretty good tenderloin, but a New York is key. Now, how many of you are willing to pay $24 a pound for New York? It's getting a little lonelier in here. How many of you would pay $70 for a steak on a plate? Okay, because when we're talking about high cattle prices, we're talking, that is what my job is how do I take and convince consumers that paying $60 or $70 for a 16-ounce steak is worth it, right? Because if I can't do it, I'm the tip of the spear, and we've got problems. I'm going to give you a little background on our restaurant group. The first is our purpose, is that we revel in celebrating lives. Our restaurants are built around celebration. The thing I want to celebrate today is the tremendous work that the cattlemen, ranchers, and this entire industry puts in to create the products that we're allowed to sell. And so I want to thank you for that, because without you, I don't have anything. But without me, my theory to you is that we have problems. So Gaucho Hospitality, I'm just going to give you a background on our restaurant group and why you might want to pay attention to me. We have 5 restaurants, a boutique hotel, and an off-site events company. We build field kitchens and do amazing events around the Northwest. Key things like when Boeing delivered for the 50th anniversary of the Korean Airlines a 777 and a 767 nose-to-nose. We were the people that served the steak on the field to the Korean delegation, the president of GE Aircraft Engines, and all the Boeing executives. That's the type of level that we provide. We've got 30 million in revenues, 357 employees, or 350 employees. In 97, El Gaucho Seattle started, and we started with something that was really new to the Northwest at that time, and that was a certified Angus beef brand. And we took that, and we dry-aged it, because we thought dry-aging was the way to really treat a great piece of meat, to take a beautiful short line, beautiful New York, age that out. We cook everything on charcoal, right? So we don't use gas infrared ovens. We cook it the way you would cook it if you had time to do it, not just firing up the Viking, you know, propane grill. 2001, at an annual conference in Whistler, British Columbia, my dad ended up meeting a gentleman, who's pictured to the right, named John Tarpoff. And at that time, Tarpoff Packing was producing a bunch of prime cattle, and he wasn't selling them as CAB because he could get more money as prime. So out of that relationship, we agreed to basically buy the prime cattle with the CAB markup, and eventually that would become the CAB prime brand. We've been longtime partners with CAB, and it was our argument was that we needed even a more premium product, and CAB delivered that. The ranchers have delivered, and the rest is history on that side. In 2012, for a whole host of reasons, we've actually made an additional switch, and we've gone with a Nyman Ranch CAB program. So a never, never, never program. So no antibiotics, no growth hormones, all vegan feed. We still use CAB tenderloins. We can't get enough of the other stuff. And this year, we added in an Imperial Wagyu dried strip loin, which was the first USDA-certified Wagyu brand. And I just bring this up because, like I said before, I think that in some ways the high-end steakhouses are the tip of the spear in terms of where this industry is going to go. And the reason is, it's because nobody else does this, right? Kroger, QFC, all these big retailers, Costco, right? You're lucky to get 10 days of aging on a retail program. This, racks of short loins, racks of New York strips, shell steaks, that's what we demand for our product. And so what I'm going to say is that high-end steakhouses and quality beef have a history together, and the movement was together. Because steakhouses needed incredible quality, and as everybody knows, through the 70s, beef got pretty bad in this country for a steakhouse perspective. It was all about how big, how much, but the lack of quality really impacted. Fast forward, done an incredible job with branded programs, with new certifications. There was, basically 20 years ago, there was one branded product. Now there's over, I think it was 120 when I went on the USDA site. And so my pitch is that what steakhouses do, especially the regional ones, not the big national guys, but the regional, local, innovative steakhouses, should matter to your business. I'm going to tell you a little bit about how we train our employees and staffing and education that we do both in-house and out-of-house. And so for us, how do you sell an incredibly expensive product? And that is, you have to begin with training. If your people, which are our servers, do not have the confidence in our products and what they're selling, they won't sell it. Because our guests trust us to recommend what is the best, whether it's the best beef, the best prawns, the best salmon. Our staff has to have the absolute confidence that what they have is the best. So for us, we spend 3 weeks in training on the front side before servers even get tables. They're spending 3 weeks learning our systems, learning service models, learning about our products. We put them onto a couple tables after that, and then they start up from that piece and build up till about 6 months when they take full sections. Cow school is mandatory, so our beef program. So you kind of see a snapshot of one of our posters that I had found yesterday. I'd taken a picture of it, and you know, it's where's the beef, the training class. Every server, so this is a refresher class because each chef actually trains each individual new hire on our beef program. But this is actually a mandatory class for refresher. Every server in our company has to go through it. And in fact, everybody's welcome to come to it. And we do get a lot of people within the restaurant that come because at the end, everybody gets to taste, gets to try the different cuts, do those pieces. So that's not enough, right? This is the in-house piece. This is us telling how good things are. So with great partners, like CAB has been a great partner of ours for years, we've been able to do things like go to the annual conferences, right, to send our executive chef, myself, our business partners, go to annual conferences to meet people like you, to meet some of the other players in the industry, so we have a better understanding. Right? But that can't stop, because that's just the top of the company. And so we send our people to the what used to be called roundups. I know it's called something else, and they'll kill me for not remembering it. But roundups were an opportunity, a multi-day opportunity for our chefs, our GMs, our key management team to go on site and learn from a cow-calf producer all the way through feedlots to the harvesting process. They go to meat science school. They spend, I think, 2.5 days in an immersive program with people from all over the country and all over the world to learn more about beef. And the gentleman that's up there on the left-hand side with the sunglasses was a very talented chef of ours. And he had worked for lots of other people. And we send him to this roundup. And I could just tell he was like, really? A cow's a cow. Right? Was his attitude. He came back. And he sat there and preached to his entire culinary team how incredibly hard it was to make that steak that we just threw on the grill, and the amount of effort and families and all these people involved to produce this beautiful steak, and that they would never, ever, ever overcook a steak ever again. What a waste. So if we could do education and turn somebody on the culinary side who really had an Italian and French culinary background, right, almost had a disdain for steaks, and turn them into believers, imagine what we could do with our guests. And that's what we've been doing. Ranch and farm tours. So we can't send all of our employees off to Nebraska or Colorado for roundups, but what we can do is we can send them out to some ranches. Luckily, Washington State, we still have ranches, still have farms. And so we arranged with CAB. We went out to a place called Trinity Farms. And I know the difference between a ranch and a farm. Farms grow some food along with it, not just animals. And our staff all knows that too now. And we were actually, got to take them out. There's 35 of our staff and 8 local food writers, reporters, right? Because there's other players in this whole market that we keep an eye on, and how do we help move them along in the right way? So we took them out to Trinity Farms, about a 2-hour drive outside of Seattle, and gave them, you know, kind of an overview of beef production, where things are at. They got to see, you know, the pens and the talk about EPDs, basically have like know what it's like to run a mini ranch, mini farm. And you got to remember, you know, we're in the city, right? So I have people that work in our restaurant that have never been out to a farm or a ranch. And so one of them, one of my GM, CV, at one point stopped. She said, can I pet it? Right? She had never touched a cow before. So there's a nice, beautiful little Angus calf. And so she got to touch it. Right? And I guess my point on that is, out here or out there in Ellensburg, it's like the city's so far away. But for the city, the ranches and farms are far away. But every time we take our staff, we take reporters, we take other people out to see what you all do, what vineyard managers do, what farmers do, there's a sense of touch, there's a sense of appreciation that I cannot understate. And so we're going to continue to do these things because it benefits, I think, both the producer side and the restaurant side to know where stuff comes from. Right? By the way, we got, I think, some good press off that. And also, just again, it's about educating the local food writing community about what's happening in our state and what's happening across the cattle industry as well. But there's other stuff that it's hard to bring 35 people out. And so we did another event, and this time we brought the cattle to the city. It was actually right outside the city. And we called it Cattle in the Vines. So again, this was about 36 of our people, along with, I think there was 18 writers, food writers, Sunset Magazine, different elements. We brought them out to a winery. So this is Chateau St. Michel's winery. That's the backside. We loaded up a truck and brought out cattle and basically did a seminar out on the grounds. And then we went inside and we paired off wine with different cuts. And we gave both our team that already knew the cuts, but really the riders a taste of all the different cuts and the flavor profiles and tenderness profiles. Again, this was in partnership with CAB. It was in partnership with a winery. Right? I'll touch on that a little bit later, because wineries, that wine industry has done an incredible job of turning egg into something sexy and interesting, place-specific, time value, and how do you take lots of different producers and at the end of the day have lots of different brands and allow people to find their place in that world. The lower right were actually we did a blending class where they were able to blend different wines. And you can't really see the pictures, but you'll see that most of them have cows on them. They made their own labels, and that's what our staff walked away with, as well as the culinary writers. So again, just a tremendous opportunity to bring a producer in. And we had originally thought about trying to do this at one of the restaurants out in the field, but decided probably might be a little too close for comfort for the guests to see the cow out in the field and then go and eat one. So these are just a couple of the things that we have done in partnership with many others, including CAB, Chateau St. Michel, to help educate our staff to ultimately be able to sell this high-end beef. This is maybe where I start going off a little bit and talking about where we think we're going. Clearly branded beef programs are here to stay. We've went from CAB to CAB Prime to the Nyman Ranch CAB product. We do believe that the high-end restaurants, the local steakhouses, are the tip of the spear, meaning where we go, it's probably likely that others may follow. And the reason I say that is, even though what we purchased in the overall beef world, what we purchased is statistically insignificant, it's not unnoticed. And that's across the supply chain. The opportunity to build brands with key restaurants, and other supply chains are already doing this. So when you have wineries and liquor, even prawns, they use us as a brand building mechanism to then maybe pull stuff on the retail channel. We'd also like, from where we think we'd want to go, is continuing that direct connection to ranchers and feedlots. I mean, ultimately, the server training, I'd like to be able to tell them, you know, the 18 ranches that our cattle come from. Right, developing a whole system under a branded program so we have third-party verification and those things. because our guests do want to know where stuff's coming from. And I know they touched on that earlier, but the consumer is not unaware of what's going on in the world. And so the question is, do we help guide that, or do we allow others who may have ulterior motives to guide that? Where we think the industry is going. Again, I'm better for the Q&A, so I'm hoping that you'll come to the bullpen sessions. Again, the regional high-end steakhouses matter. There was massive industry consolidation on the distribution side that you may or may not be aware of, where the big food service companies really bought up all the specialty meat companies. And that happened, I think, about a decade ago. that's starting to show some cracks. And there's great opportunity in that because there's actually lots of new startup and smaller regional specialty meat distributors that can do things like dry aging, that can do specialty programs that I think become important in the future. retail versus food service channel. This is kind of an interesting deal. But in my world, I get preferential pricing compared to retail on most everything but beef because I help build brands. And so where does this go in terms of allocation? Where does it go on the export markets? Because one thing hasn't ever failed to stop in terms of our demand. You know, Korea shuts down. China, while unbelievable market, and there's lots of great money in there, the Australians have already learned that while China was a great market them for the Australian tells, and they bought all of the live Australian lobsters, I couldn't get my hands on any of them for a couple years, the Australians are back selling to the U.S. because they know that we have a stable democracy and a stable economy and a platform that's built to last, not one that may not be around at the same level that it is right now. And if you think that that's not true, look at where the wealthy Chinese are putting their money. It's not in their own country. opportunities created by specialty distributors, really the ability to bring back aging, right? The fact that some retailers sell beef that's, I mean, literally as fast as they can get it from the slaughterhouse to the retail shelf, which doesn't show your beef as well as a 2, 3, 4 week aging process, let alone dry aging that we do. There's great in-house cutting expertise. The sales reps of specialty are suited to our needs. So under the other model where one big truck backs up and drops off toilet paper and beef and produce and all these other things, we're looking for specialty people who can fulfill our needs. And I think that's the opportunity for you as well. So what can producers do? You know, part of it is what's your story, right? Do you care where your cattle go? Do you care about the distribution piece? And how does that unfold as life goes on? Because I believe that it does. Which distribution channel is going to be the right thing for you? So there's startup ranches pulling together to sell, you know, branded products or pull different pieces. It's not the big distributors that are going to rep you. It's going to be the small distributors. They're looking for a niche to go into. You know, again, some simple things like video online presence. Is there a story you want to tell? Because the producer videos that we've been able to showcase have been fantastic for our consumers, for our people. Look to the wine industry. I think there's some lessons learned of how the wine industry has taken an egg product and made it into something with lots of brands, lots of opportunities. It's not all three different producers. It's lots and lots of different people serving different niches in the market. And is there a role for sourcing transparency? I know that, I think it was the, is it cool that in terms of the, you know, where things were born, et cetera. At some point, whether the regulatory areas demand it, consumers are interested. And, you know, Seattle might be a little bit wacky, but Washington State isn't really that wacky. And we recently had a GMO initiative on the ballot. And it didn't pass. In fact, it lost by about 6 points. I think the total spread was about 10 points. But it didn't lose because people didn't care. It lost because they thought it didn't fairly treat everybody across things and that it might have been more important to do it at a national level. I'm just telling you because I'm out living in that market. We were living through those pieces. And so there will be a role at some point because we already do it with some of our products where we have full traceability and tracking already because it does matter to some of our consumers. And then our guests have asked about other beef as well. So, you know, the grass-fed beef, it's not my deal. But we continue to get those questions about grass-fed beef and you know, why don't we carry it? I explained to them, it's not really great for steaks. It smells a little funky, but it's great for carnitas. But, you know, that only holds so long before we got to look at how that occurs. We would never switch to it, but consumers are definitely interested in what is going on there. I know we're getting close on time. No, we've got the bullpen sessions tonight. And like I said before, my strong suit is actually answering a lot of questions. So I look forward to those elements. Hopefully we'll get a lot of people to show up. Again, what I do want to continue to point out is that the high-end restaurants matter, that we do provide brand building, and that if we continue to want to get these high prices, somebody's got to go out and sell them. And if you're not willing to pay $24 a pound for a New York strip, but they are in Seattle and I'm willing to pay that and sell it for $70, what we do matters. So thank you.